you may have heard this question before. What the hell is your life about? Do you know? Okay. If you want to answer that question, what is your concept of life all about? Do you know that?
Concept?
No? Okay.
Like helping people?
But what?
Like being needed or helping people, that kind of thing?
I don't know, you think that's your concept of life? Helping people? That's crap. Come on.
That's a wish.
Give me a better clue to go by.
Concept.
Huh?
What's the concept?
You think that's your concept of life?
No, I'm not sure what you're asking. What's the concept?
No. I said, what is your concept of your life, or your concept of life and you in the life? I'm talking about you, lady. Anybody out there listening in is welcome to jump in and answer the question, or we'll move right along. Okay, instead of merely speaking of your concept of life and of the universe and your place in all of this, are you willing to directly experience that concept and continually live it? Or are you afraid to think about maybe your concept of life is not something you want to experience and live? I think from that look, the answer is probably yes. Okay. Do you remember our article years ago titled Make It Up and Make It Real? Or has everybody forgot the article?
No.
Then my question to you is, are you willing to make up a concept of yourself and life and experience that? I guess nobody wants to do that. Well, okay. Are you willing to consider that, believe it or not, that is exactly what your life is all about today? Experience the concept of yourself and life and the universe and your place within the universe. Is that okay? Anybody got any bitches and complaints? Okay, I can see this is going to be a very vocal evening. Then the question is, have you created a concept that pleases and fulfills you? Concept that you would gladly be and live eternally? And if not, is it possible that death offers you an opportunity to conceive of yourself anew and become that? Why do I smell? Is something on the stove, or is it coming in from outside?
Yeah,
we always smell what the neighbors eat. Okay. They do a lot of barbecuing too. Okay, what'd you say, Andrew? Yep.
Is it possible to live life without a concept of life?
No.
Take it moment at a time?
No.
That's a concept.
There you go. Taking a moment at a time is still a concept. No matter what you do, you are living and experiencing today the concept of life that you have created or made up.
I assume this goes back to infants and everybody else.
What?
Everybody is, including infants. Is it true?
Well, what was before that?
What was before that?
What did you say, Andrew? Can you repeat what you said?
Yeah, I said it's true for everybody, including babies.
Yeah.
And then Roger asked me a question. What was before that?
Yeah.
Well, let's see. I guess I'm a little unclear about that in the sense of, maybe is...
So, wait a minute, let me interrupt you. It seems then that what you're saying is you believe that your birth, as in baby, was a beginning.
Well, no, what I'm saying is previously, through a lot of things we discussed in the last year or so, I would have said that whatever my prior lives were...
doesn't matter from what you're saying what your prior lives were. And what you seem to be saying is that babies must have a concept and then it's developing from their beginning. I mean, how could you even question that if you think you've had prior lives, then do not those prior lives start forming a concept?
Yeah, I think they do. Yep.
Then you're living a concept of yourself and life today that a prior concept should be no stranger to you. You should say, yes, okay. Of course.
I'm a little confused about the whole DNA, loner body, parents, things like that.
Why do you bring all that in?
I don't know. Please, I don't know that it wouldn't come in. It's just part of the whole package.
But you see, Andrew, I'm asking you, do you have a concept, and are you living a concept? Can't you just hold it to that, say yes or no, or tell me what your concept might be, and then let DNA and all this other stuff that I said sort of rally around whatever that concept is or not?
Okay, yep. So I think I am living a concept. I guess I think it's a lot more shaped by language and my prior Catholicism probably.
I didn't ask you that. I don't really care about how you got it, what it shaped it, etc. Are you living a concept of life that for you is satisfying, fulfilling, pleasing, one that you'd be willing to live eternally no matter what?
I think
no. Oh, well, gee whiz, we got there. And it is all of this obfuscation that you bring up would indicate that when I ask you what is your life all about, do you know, your answer would be, no, I haven't got the vaguest idea. Whereas maybe if we could then get to a fundamental concept, then maybe all this stuff and anything I say might sort of hang together or fall apart. Well, since ancient times, but that means before religion, but certainly since religion, life has only been about preparing for death and, in some way, making yourself ready for an unknown life after death. Is that really the self and life you desire living?
No.
Nope. If not, is it possible for you to realize that your life today is about bringing your eternal self to life? For though your eternal self exists, it's not alive. Is that okay?
I think that's true.
Your eternal self is enclosed in darkness. Maybe it's sort of enclosed in darkness like enclosed in a monastery. Could you take the image of an eternal self like in the image of our audience, etc., as being many selves? Could you conceive of a monastery being of many individuals And could you, in the same sort of way, consider your eternal self, which is the 95% of you, like a monastery of cells that are hidden away? Is there anybody out there?
Yeah, Roger.
Yes,
in
yes.
This context, what are you thinking and what do you apply to the term monastery?
Yes, when I say your eternal self is 95% of you in dark matter, it's something somewhere, whatever, and I just said as a monastery as being enclosed and separate from you. Have you not relegated your possibly eternal, the way I've been describing it, have you not relegated yourself, your 95% away from yourself, such that, like the audience, that you are living only the 5% on the stage?
I think that's quite possible.
So when I say monastery, they're off living or existing in their own concept of life, in a monastery or an ashram or whatever you want to call it, and you're out here 5% experiencing life.
So a cloistered existence.
Cloistered existence. And as a cloistered existence, it's not really alive. Not alive anyway in the light of experiencing. Because they're cloistered away in entirely within a self-developed life. Could you imagine that?
I can imagine that, yes. Yeah. Yes, I can.
Would you be willing to initiate your eternal self into the joy of being alive? In other words, take your eternal self out of that cloistered life? Whereas religion seems to then speak of the joy of being dead.
Or being cloistered.
The same thing. In ancient Egypt, B.C., a group of individuals living sort of west of Alexandria, actually I used to live in Alexandria, slightly east of Alexandria. Wrong, different Alexandria.
Yeah.
Individuals living west of Alexandria claimed knowledge of a process of healing that was not common in the area of Egypt because they healed both the body and the soul. And because of this knowledge of healing, they were known as therapeutae, which seems to be where our word therapeutics comes from. Well, at those times, people were also the therapeutae. They had all sorts of rituals and things they did and going on, whatever. In those times, people of that group, anyway, were initiated into the practice of leaving their body to travel to the far world. The far world was supposed to be the world of the gods or all of that sort of stuff. Today we call that astral travel. Done a bit. Read, if you're interested in that, read Robert Munro's, if you could ever get that book.
Journeys Out of the Body.
Huh?
Journeys Out of the Body.
Yeah, is that the name of it?
Yep.
Okay, Journeys Out of the Body. But that's a 1970s book, and you may have trouble finding it. unless I don't imagine that it's necessarily out of print for the Navy.
You can look them up online. The Monroe Institute still exists and carries on
they
its
do?
Work.
They
yeah.
do? Oh, there you go. Well, they were practiced. The fact is, there were a whole lot of practices of this sort of nature of traveling to the far world, which was considered the world of the gods, or the land of the gods, and of ancestors. It was believed that when you died in this world, then you traveled to the world of to the far world, which was the world of ancestors. So, would you be willing to travel to the far world, or we might say today, call it the eternal world, to gain mysterious knowledge? Can I get a yes or a no from anybody?
I'm in.
Ken's in. Anybody want to go along with Ken? Well, what'd you say, Sally?
Go for mystery.
Okay. I want you to consider this question for a moment. If you left your body and traveled to the Orion constellation, I just picked that for any reason, as a far world, travel to the Orion constellation for secret knowledge, do you think that your awareness and understanding would be different in the constellation? Or isn't it probable that you would convert everything there to your beliefs and bring back all those mysteries only in the form you already believe? I think I've been hard up against that for an awful long time, because no matter what I bring up, like, it's like Charlotte used to say, you were like, ooh, world, somebody from out of this world, and in what you were saying, and so maybe you all are the same way. Maybe you're only going to stay with what you believe and bring back or translate or mistranslate what I say, and to or distort it to what you already believe. Is that reasonable to consider that that is most likely?
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Okay. Got an answer. Got to have some answers on the black box, because I don't know whether you guys are out there. I can see these two in here.
I said yes.
I know. That's what I said. I need those answers. I even know we're reaching all the way over to Switzerland that way.
Okay.
So, if you would go to Orion and for mysteries, for great information, and then distort everything and bring it back only as you already know, what have you gained, and number one, and what do you think we could do about that, if anything?
I think unless you can change the way you live with the information you bring back and create something new and different in your life, then you may be able to actually retain or bring that back.
Could you consider that you would probably only what you think is a change your life and think is new and different is only differently? It's a different way then of doing the same old, same old.
Probably. I think that would be a step in between doing something totally new, doing it differently, or just
But then if that's a step in between, then you're doing a cause and effect becoming, doing a superlative thing, and you haven't changed a damn thing in your life.
I agree. I'm saying that if you're doing that, you'll never get
You'll never there. Get anywhere. You'll never get off the dime.
Right. I agree. Wholeheartedly.
So let's assume you've heard of dark matter and dark energy of the universe. And since you are in the universe and of the universe, you can probably realize that 95% of you is dark matter as well. Okay. What you see and know of yourself is, at best, 5% of you. And you only live and believe and experience that 5%. Okay, until now you have lived a life of learning, developing, growing, and evolving to a greater self. Meaning, to the other 95% of yourself. And maybe being faithful and all that kind of stuff, so that God then would grant you everlasting life. So, if you were to leave your 5% self, travel to the world of the gods or masters for great mysterious knowledge, isn't it probable that your 5% would control everything? Everything you see and know, everything you bring back. Consider the revelations of John the Divine in the Bible. Can anybody tell me what the book of Revelations is about, or what is in there? Are not all the pictures, the images, if these are great revelations from afar, yet all the symbols, the words, the designations, everything in there is only of the same old 5% self. So what the hell does it mean? Anybody can rush right in and answer one of these questions just for the fun of it.
Well, are you...
confirmation of what I believe anyway.
Can't hear you, Miss Simone.
It seems to be a confirmation of what I believe anyway.
So it doesn't tell you anything.
Yes.
So there's nothing in Revelation. The only way there could be anything in Revelations is that somehow or other you twist it to mean or say something. But even what it may say in Revelations is only about what you already believe anyway.
I think that's true, yes.
Okay, thanks. Now Ken's got an add-on.
Well, that true about everything?
What?
Is that's true about everything then, yeah?
Well, maybe it is. What if it is? If it is, then all this going to the masters or getting revelations and getting great understandings and awareness and truth don't mean squat. Because no matter what you see, you will only see what you already believe. You would only gain and understand what you already believe, maybe in a differently way. And you would only bring back the reason it's called mysterious knowledge, because of the same old crap that is still mysterious as to what the hell is that all about?
My question was, do the revelations actually exist to be known in a different way?
Are you saying, does a revelation exist that could be known in a different way? Is that what you said?
Yes. Could I actually know something or get an understanding of something outside of my who I am?
Well, let's assume for the moment the answer is yes, there is a revelation, and no, you can't. But there's something you can do about it.
That's what I'm here for. Carry on.
Anybody want to refute that? Is it possible that if you really want to gain great and grand knowledge, it seems you must take knowing to your 95%? To your eternal self, or to the 95% of the universe, and inspire your 95% to come to the light of life and experiencing. Does this make any kind of sense? You wonder just what the hell is going on.
I know. I'm
what the hell is he mumbling about?
Well, if I, in a sense, go out into the 95%. So I'm bringing back myself. Is it essentially what you're saying? Bringing part of myself, allow that, into the light of life
but
and an understanding.
Is it this possibility? If you are going to your 95% to get knowledge and understanding to bring back, I think what we concluded a moment ago is it isn't going to be any revelation. It's going to be the same old stuff.
But what, my question essentially is, what I'm going after is me. What I'm going to bond with, bring back, experience.
Maybe yes and maybe no, but
okay.
We'll say yes for the moment.
Okay.
Is it possible for you to take something, rather than go there to get something, take something to your 95% to encourage or listen carefully, Yuko, or to inspire your 95% to come out of the darkness into the light, come back with you? In other words, if you maintain yourself, the knowledge, information, revelations, everything remains the same. Could you bring the 95% of yourself that remains in the dark to be and live with you such that you don't bring back the information, you bring back the self that is the information? And that in this lifetime, then, you communion with that self, and in that, then, be the expression of that knowledge and information. Is that okay out there in the black box world?
Yeah, I think it's okay.
Yeah,
it makes a lot of sense.
Well,
it's the other way around.
What?
Simone, I told you from the beginning, take everything you think about life, turn it around 180 degrees, and you'll begin to understand what the hell I'm talking about.
Yes, that's really true.
That's right.
But until now, we try to go to get something, and now we go to bring something back. So
to bring ourselves back as... That's right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Religion claims that life is a trial or test. Do you suppose that's correct? If you are willing, are you willing to live your life as a trial or test?
No.
No.
Wait a minute. I never said it was a trial or test of you. It's a trial or test of life. You are testing life. You are trying life. Isn't that really what's going?
I think that's more valid. That makes more sense.
That's right. And then religion has distorted that to say, you are being tested. No, I got news for you. You are testing life.
Yeah.
I was saying that just 30 minutes ago.
Well, here it is 30 minutes later.
Took that long to get here.
Echo. Slow echo. All ancient realizations seem to have had an active belief in an underworld. Aztecs, Hopis, Egypt, all talk about the underworld. And it was considered that the underworld was death, was bad, was problems, was difficulty. Is it possible that the underworld was really, really, really expressing your dark self? And that all of the life or in the underworld religion, civilizations of Aztecs and etc., have gone to great lengths to construct an underworld, or even if you say the pyramids of Giza were a underworld constructed above into the light world, is it possible that the pyramids of Giza and the tunnels, the Queen's Chamber, the King's Chamber, and all of the passages in there actually represented the dark world or the dark matter of yourself, and that the initiation into the dark world or into the darkness of yourself in an underworld, as the Aztecs and etc. Created, that was really, really, really an initiation into the 95% of yourself. And is it possible then that, in fact, all of this dark world, which then became to symbolize the bad and etc., was a dark matter of yourself gone awry? Hey, the Hopi Indians said or believed that they came from within the world, in the earth. They rose up and spoke of how far up someone has come. Glad to see how far up you've come. I would say to a great degree you haven't risen and aren't becoming. Whoever you are, you've limited yourself down to that. You've limited yourself away from your 95%. Are you willing to, and in what way, what would you be willing to do to bring your 95% into the light? Anything? Well, we're just overrun with answers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Anything is correct.
Hey, if you think I'm hearing you, Simone, you're wrong, and I can't hear Andrew.
I said, travel to my ancestors.
Well, then, if you can possibly imagine coming from dark matter, from an eternal self of many, many selves, or from a provenance of many ancestors, are you willing to leave your body today and return to the world of your eternal self of dark matter?
Permanently?
Not to be initiated into the mysteries of dark matter, but to take, but to bring the gospel of the joy and freedom of being alive and experiencing to your eternal self in the darkness.
Right.
And in that, then, to bring your eternal self into the light of experiencing.
So, Roger, I want to know if I'm hearing something here. You start off by asking us about our concept of life. I'm wondering if what I'm hearing now from what you're saying is, you take a different concept of life, and then all these things we've heard, you know, in traditions and religions and stuff all our life, take on an entirely different understanding. Like the idea of the underworld or your dark self and things like that. Where am I off base there?
No, I don't disagree with that, but then be more specific than that. Because you say, am I saying something other and different than that? Then fine, relax for a moment and see if you can pursue in your own way, in your own words, a different or other than that. I mean, religion, your religion is to bring you, is to do what God wants, etc., to bring you into, if you do it right, in out of the darkness of absence from God, into the light of being united with God, into the greater self of yourself.
Okay, now pause for a second.
I am.
Let's say I've lived that concept, then I look at and experience everything in life, no matter what it is, in that sort of duality struggle.
Well, let's not say duality struggle. There's no duality struggle necessarily in what I said. That is a process of life. Do you accept and believe, and are you willing to continue living that process of life?
No. It's not working out for me the way I wanted it to.
Then, what process of life would you be willing to live from just using the words or the concepts or the beliefs that I have spoken of tonight? Don't bring in a lot of other stuff.
Well, I think based on what you said tonight, I'm following here, but I'd be willing to live the concept of bringing light to the 95% of myself that's there that I don't know that exists, but I'm not aware of, not alive.
Wait a minute.
Yep.
You've got a little problem there. If you bring light to the 95%, haven't you really done it backwards?
Yeah, I thought that, yes, and I did think that was the point, yes.
What? I meant, but isn't the point, if you bring light to the 95%, what difference is there in that than religion saying you bring light and life to yourself? That you cause and affect that and create that and bring that to yourself.
What else do you propose?
Don't ask me what I propose. I ask you, what would you be willing to be and live from what I said tonight?
I don't have a clear enough image of what you said tonight to answer in those terms.
No. I want you to talk to me about what alternative concept you would be willing to live, regardless of what I say. I'm just limiting you to, because you have a tendency to run off and we all do, have a tendency to run off and obfuscate everything, talk for 10 minutes and think you've said something. I'm limiting you only to the nature of what I've said tonight. What alternative do you have? If you go there to bring awareness back to you, or if you go there to bring...
I know what you're saying.
Okay.
Also, present self high oriented. So, what if I brought a different self back?
What? What?
I would bring a different self there or a different self back. I'm not sure which way it's going. Maybe both.
What do you mean by different? Talk to me. Don't just give me a throw out adjectives and adverbs and think I'm going to understand.
The different self meaning a one that I make up that I'd be willing to live forever and ever.
What about it? You going to make something up and take it up to your 95%?
I'm just kicking it around, maybe, yeah. I never thought of it that way before.
Is it possible that your living your 95% is already a made-up concept? That, and I'm asking you, or would you be willing to do that?
I would be willing to do that.
You sure?
Yeah.
So, you wouldn't maintain Andrew... Go to your 95%, let's say for the moment, Anno, and bring for information, for wisdom, for understanding, for healing, for anything, and then come back and live that. Is that correct?
I think I follow that.
Then what would you be, following that pattern, what would you be willing to do?
I don't know how to put words to that.
Sure you do. You don't want to. Anybody out there want to put words in Andrew's mouth?
Go for the whole enchilada, Angela. Andrew, go for the whole enchilada.
Wayne Dyer is asking
me.
No, I want you to answer the question, Andrew, because until you are willing to say, I would do this, you can't get started. If you listen to Ken saying or giving an answer that he would talk about, you say, well, that's what he would do. I want you to tell me, relative to the way we've talked this about tonight, what might it be that you would do? Okay. Patrick, what would you do? 95% is Masters. Would you go to Masters to gain information to bring that out back so that Patrick can live a fuller, greater life?
No.
What?
No, I would not.
What would you do?
I would invite Masters out into the life of living in this material, visible existence and invite him to participate with me in this life.
So then you would be willing to communion with Masters and in that live as a communioned individual of 5% and 95%. What are you telling me that?
I think that's exactly what I mean.
In other words, you're saying you don't bring the wisdom back. You be the wisdom now.
Yeah, I'll be living it with and in communion with Masters, yes.
But you would then be living it through Masters. Is that okay?
No, I don't know. Do you think that's the way it is, or would we be doing it together and by inviting him in with me into the world of the physical expression that I have access, and he has access to a whole lot more as well?
I'm asking you, if you brought Masters back, would you be willing to live your life through Masters, or would you continue living Patrick and suppose I have all this great knowledge and wisdom available to me, which would you do?
Oh, well then, set up like that, I would live it through Masters.
So then, whereas in religion might say God lives through you, then you would, in the same way, live through masters.
There we are at one of those 180 degree things again.
Okay, what's wrong with that?
I think that's just fabulous.
So then you would be communion with masters, but not in a sense or way of you continuing to live, Pat, with this connection, like your iPhone, to all this information that you would probably distort and not use at all or understand at all, but you would live all of that through masters such that the experience did not get distorted by you, but the knowledge and experience didn't get distorted by you, but came directly through you as master. In other words, you enliven and live the knowledge directly.
Well, absolutely. I have that. I have an image of that now very, very clearly. Very much so.
That's called true listening.
Thank you.
Now do you understand, Andrew, what we're talking about? I can't hear a word he said. Did he even
hear
what he
said? I think that's pretty different than where I was going.
But that was the point, Andrew. I want you to go there. I want you to be willing to say, I'm willing to let go of Andrew and live Andrew through Anno. In the one case, you would say, that's a communion. Yeah, it is, but it's also you living through Anno, then you are living and experiencing that knowledge, that wisdom directly.
Is the concept all right, in there?
I got it.
What?
Is the concept in there, that description you just gave?
I don't understand what you're asking. Are you asking me, would that be a different concept of life? Wouldn't it? Like Patrick said, wouldn't that be 180 degrees around? We maintain ourselves and try to the 5% and try to get the knowledge to enhance the 5% rather than living through the 95%, and in that you are enhanced by everything you do. Is this okay? I sound to you, Simone, I heard your
Yes.
Hey, Raj, would you repeat it just one more time, please?
You have lived all of your life as a 5%er, hoping that somewhere along the line you would expand your 5%, or you would gain knowledge and understanding and wisdom of forever living or whatever it is, that would make your 5%, wow, bigger, bigger, bigger in everybody's eyes. And I'm saying that if you did that, you would distort all of the knowledge and information, experiences, and awareness of your 95% down to your 10% and gain nothing.
All right.
Are you willing to then be the essence of Anno and you be the voice and the mouthpiece of your eternal self and live as an eternal being?
Okay, yes.
So you're
willing to live as that.
Then you're living through that. You are not living. Andrew, are you willing to surrender yourself as Andrew and live through your 95%? And be the 95%, not the 5%.
Okay. Yeah, I got it. Yes.
You want to change your mind, Patrick?
Not at all.
Anybody else want to? Now.
Roger, want to ask a question real quick?
Yeah.
My guest Danny here asked a question, how would you know that you're doing that?
living your 95%.
You would know by the way and the manner in which your life is emergent. Can you explain that to him and anybody else who's listening in?
I think that would mean that, let's see, that I would start finding wholly different qualities in my life just appearing out of nowhere that confirm or substantiate that I'm living through my eternal being.
Qualities of you and events in your life that you did not cause.
That I did not cause, right. They're just sort of there. Okay, yes, got it.
That's of yourself, because those are the 95%. Those are qualities and properties of the 95%. And that you are living those than not causing them. Is that all right?
Yes.
And could you then presume that the universe of mind is such that as you mind yourself in that way, the universe is itself and is to you as you are and as you are as you mind yourself?
Okay, that sounds yes. Yes. Sounds like a yes.
Do you consider... No, let me see this. Why do you consider your life only as you brain it to be? Yourself and life and the world around you only as you brain it to be.
I guess I can't find any alternatives.
What if I gave you an example? And I hate these damned examples, but if I gave you an example, would that be enough for you to say, well, shit, yeah?
Well, shit, yeah.
Is there more than one light in the world?
More than one light in the world?
L-I-G-H-T.
The light that I see falling. Yeah, right. The light that I see coming from the light bulb in the room, or the light that I see when I dream.
If there's two lights in the world, isn't one light of your brain and one light of your mind? One light of your eyes and one light of your mind?
Okay, so a light of the body or a light of my mind, yeah?
Well, then, there's that then not... Your brain is of your body, and your mind is of yourself.
Yep.
Is it then possible that you are living your 5%, meaning the mind of your 5% body, or the brain of your 5% body, rather than the mind of your 95% honor? What?
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
And so when neuroscience says this is the way your brain works, you can say, yeah, but that ain't the way my mind works.
So I'm just living by default if I'm just living body light or world light.
Isn't that possible?
Well, I think it's definitely probable. It's like a whole aspect of myself I haven't even turned on.
My question to you, is it possible for you to consider that all of Pericope, I can't remember these words. Pericope 14a is only about exercising your mind rather than your brain?
Now I think about it, yeah.
Has anybody out there watch any part of the new series called Brain Games?
Not yet.
These are all showing you how your brain, in a sense, defeats you. Distorts everything. misunderstands what's going on. They even say your brain was developed to keep your body alive. And that's okay. We're asking you, are you, that's your 5%. Are you willing to live and express your 95%? Maybe you need, this is why I'm bringing this up, maybe you need to practice some of these exercises in 14A in order to switch out of the brain game and into the mind game. Well, for a long time, we've spoken of living as you truly desire. Would anyone like to challenge that?
This, how would we challenge that?
Well, this living as you truly desire, if you take that out of the dictionary, etc., that means living as you genuinely desire. Would you challenge that?
Who's you? No, which you are you talking about?
Who am I talking to?
Which you.
Well, anyone, I want anybody to challenge it. Or not.
You're 5% you or you're 95% you? Desire.
Your 5% you is living as you truly desire, which means living as you genuinely desire, and you're focused completely on your 5% personal self you. Is that okay? Or would you then say, wait a minute, I have a different other concept of me and I don't want to live as I truly desire. What would you say to that?
I thought that living as I truly desire is a long-term concept.
Then why wouldn't you say live as you eternally desire?
Okay.
So, if up till now I say live as you truly desire, if I then say, which is really what I've been saying all along, if I then say, well, let's change that and say live as you eternally desire, would that change your concept of everything in your life today?
Yes, because doesn't that not bring in the 95% master?
Yes, but
yes.
Maybe that does several other things too. In living as you eternally desire means, let's say, in the moment, you might not live as you emotionally desire. Is that okay?
Yes.
You see? And maybe it is in the moment you might not live in a way to fix, heal, overcome, solve, and resolve what the hell you've done.
So you'd be mind living rather than brain living.
Would that be so bad?
No, that'd be awesome.
Is it possible that like therapeutai, which that heals the body and the soul, when we speak of soul, which by the way, your body is your soul, but it's the body aspect and the soul aspect of your body in that regard, that you would be healing the physical aspects of your body and the eternal aspects of your body and brain and the eternal aspects of your mind. Last week I said, is it possible for you to consider that being aware of the 95% while living the 5%, wanting to be the 95%, and not doing that is a silent killer in your life?
Yes, yeah.
And if the guy, whoever's there with you, Andrew, that says, well, how would I know that I would do that? Don't you think that if you live as you eternally mind, that everything in your body and life would change dramatically?
Oh, yeah, I think so. Well, I mean, let me clarify here. We're not necessarily talking about I would suddenly have, like, millions of dollars, right? We're talking about the quality of my life and everything in it would change dramatically.
Why do you bring that up, Andrew?
I think it's an important thing to bring up.
Why? If you had $1 million, listen to me right now. If you had $1 million, would that have anything to do with what you eternally desire?
No.
Oh. It's like it was 40 years, 50 years ago, when we would say, boy, $1 million, wow. Now we say, what's $1 million, for Christ's sake? So then that would not be living as you eternally desire, because you had $1 million doesn't mean squat. And it would also mean you can't take it with you.
You can bury it and have a really good memory.
Okay.
We okay with that?
Yeah.
So, if you bring this up at your Saturday group or talk to somebody and they bring up this question, ask them, is having $1 million what you eternally desire? Pavarotti had far more than $1 million, and he hid it in the United States to keep it away from the Italian tax people. He had it all, and it didn't mean squat to him.
Right.
So that would not be as you eternally desire in that regard at all. So, how would you know? You would know that what you are doing and what your life is all about is something that you would be willing to be and live eternally, would it not?
Yes.
Well, I guess that's the way you would know whether you were doing it. So, I'm going to read a story I've read before. I don't know whether you've heard this or not, but I know you. I think you have. But a lot of you people out there have heard this story. Misty set it to music. Now, think about your 95% dark matter and 5% you. Think about the illustration of the audience of being all of the individual selves as a eternal self of yourself while you were on the stage, as Shakespeare would say, strutting and fretting your hour upon the stage, and then it's all gone. And I want you to think of, in the same way, the provenance of yourself, like a whole bunch of self, the provenance of yourself, which we will get it. Okay. I'm deciding whether I want to get into that or not tonight. But keep those images in mind and see if you can, in listening to the same the story you've heard before, or that you've now listened to my sort of preamble to the story, what kind of image that the story brings to my mind. What is the concept that this story might be promoting or describing? And is that concept that it's describing now something different than you heard Patrick 18 years ago, Andrew 15 years ago? The story is called The Great and Grand News. So I'm going to tell you a wonderful story about an ancient land, and the land is China. Oh, it's a penetrating and venerable place. And the time? Well, the time is a long, long time ago. It's a time when China was filled with sages and philosophers and mandarins, and when Lin Yang was, well, Lin Yang was a wise teacher. But as a young lad, Lin Yang was not so wise, and he made many mistakes, as small boys are prone to do. And each time he made a mistake, he sighed, "Oh, if I could just erase that or make amends, if I could just, well, change things or have life stand still for one short moment, oh, then I could do so much better. I'd transform things. I'd alter them. And the problems I have today, oh, those would all be removed and, well, I'd be forgiven. And I would rise with a new vital spirit and a renewed passion for life. Oh, and I could help others. And I could serve them with even greater understanding and compassion." Well, knowing he was not perfect, and, well, neither was his life, nor was the environment around him, Lin Yang recognized that as a mortal man, he would frequently say and do many things in ways other than what he truly wanted. Oh, he longed somehow to correct things or to eliminate his errors and misunderstandings and ease his burdens in life. He even wanted to, well, as it is what he called it, alter time. To either hold things in abeyance while he pondered matters and made a wise decision, or maybe to create opportunities to change what had happened. He wanted to correct situations and relationships and turn his life around. And he wanted to begin doing finer things. Well, he hoped to do things in better ways, or, well, at least a different way. He desperately longed to create and live, oh, a glorious life. A life filled with wisdom and compassion, and above all else, a life overflowing with precious attitudes. Oh, with wise and proper words, well, and with loving actions. This is Lin Yang's story. It's a difficult time in a strange life, yet, well, it's sort of a wondrous story. It's alive with hope and faith, well, and a little distress and agony, but it's filled with great enrichment. Early in his youth, Lin Yang learned much about the trials and tribulations of an ordinary life, and about many things about himself, and a great deal about others. He awakened his soul and discovered his purpose in life. Oh, he accepted and seemed to understand most of what came all about him. He was a tender and joyous and even a wise beyond his few years. Lin Yang was, well, he was an eager student and a fine teacher. He was devout. And he even appeared to know Lord Buddha directly and personally. But then one day he began having difficulties. Oh, he saw limitations and restrictions in his life and in his teaching. Well, barrenness is what he called it. Life was becoming a wearisome struggle. And, well, Lin Yang made even more mistakes, and he looked upon these as grievous errors in an otherwise extraordinary life. Lin Yang constantly sought to make amends for what he had done. Oh, he desperately wanted to set matters right or learn how to live without creating these problems and difficulties. And though he knew, well, they were just mistakes, he was so brokenhearted at his faults and so unhappy, well, he entered a monastery, hoping to discover sort of an inner answer to all of his distress and troubles and burdens. His new life was to be, well, a rebirth, an anointing, the beginning of his triumphal entry into a richer and fuller life. It was to be a grand opening, an expression of his inner self, or maybe just a release of his wondrous soul. He sought to truly believe in himself and know more about himself. For through his mistakes and errors and his grief and distress and the limitations and restrictions, well, that all had brought him profound understandings about himself and about many things in life. Well, Lin Yang wanted even more than that. You might wonder if this great new awareness would occur while he sat deep in meditation, hour after hour after hour. Well, that's exactly what he did. Oh, he lived a simple life and he learned many marvelous things, but for Lin Yang, his life was to be even greater and more enriching and more, well, listen, complicated. For he was selected to go upon a special mission. It seems that each year one of the initiates in the monastery, well, you might call them novices today, each year an initiate was chosen to go upon the countryside searching for great news. News that would serve him and others throughout all of eternity. But he had to return to the monastery with his grand news before a year had passed. Before the next messenger and seeker was sent out. Well, if he came back early, or if the masters were not pleased with his great news, well, they just sent him out again. And if he couldn't satisfy them, well, he'd be expelled from the monastery. He'd not be given a second chance, no siree. He had to find the great news, the grandest news, that which was of utmost importance to him and to the masters and to the monastery and to all things in his life. It was because of his sort of high achievement that Lin Yang was the chosen one that year. Oh, it was an illustrious time for him. And it was a glorious honor to be selected to go forth and discover the grand news among the peasants, or with those who toiled in the field, or in the shops, or other areas of life, or in whatever place he chose, with whomever he wished to be with. It didn't matter. But he had to bring back the great and grand news within a year. And so Lin Yang went forth. The monastery's huge wooden door was quickly shut behind him, sort of with a resounding thump. Then it was securely bolted and locked. He was alone. And suddenly he felt completely betrayed. He felt that all the comforts and closeness and the companionship and assurances he gained in the monastery, well, they were all taken away. And that they were shut off from him. He was separated from all he'd grown to love. He was forlorn. He felt abandoned and forsaken and deserted. Oh, they turned him out. Oh, whatever would he do now? Well, while we've told you what Lin Yang was to do and why he was to do it, the master said very little to him. They only told him to go forth and discover grand news and return and give them that knowledge, the awareness and the understanding of that prior to the year passing him by. Well, Lin Yang stood outside of the monastery wall just a trembling. Oh, he felt truly lost in life. He was abandoned by those who he cared for, by those he thought cared for him. And yet, well, he felt strangely uplifted and excited, and a little anxious about his new adventure. For it would either stand him in good stead or prove his downfall. Which would it be? And as he thought about it, well, Lin Yang began smiling and sort of skipping happily down the road, singing with renewed excitement as he started his search for great and grand news. And so, Lin Yang went among the peasants. Oh, he worked with them, hoping to discover some great news, or maybe a little grand event, or even an unusual occurrence. He toiled in the fields and watched the farmers closely. Oh, he listened intently to their words, to their song. He prayed with them. He became almost a part of them, but, well, everything just sort of seemed the same. It was all so commonplace and, well, so ordinary. Well, there's no great and grand news here, he sighed. Nothing seems very unusual at all. So Lin Yang began drifting away from planting and harvesting, and he traveled on. He labored with those who worked in the waterways, managing the flow of water, controlling it to properly nourish their fields and crops, but more so it wouldn't flood the land beyond repair. He worked with them, and he worked with them, and he worked some more with them, and once again he discovered, well, there's no great man news here. So he left the waterworks and went to the village and labored with what today would be called a smithy. Though a smithy at that time had many other tasks and duties in the village, Lin Yang's job was exhausting, but, well, he sure did it well. He helped the smithy because his place, the smithy's place, was the center of trade and the focus of many events. The smithy's place was the heart of things going on in town. Lin Yang felt, well, certainly he'd find great and grand news here. For many travelers came by. Surely they'd stop at the smithy's with important stories and a great news. But as time passed by, Lin Yang again felt discouraged. He said dejectedly, well, there's no astounding news here in this village. And even as I hear from the travelers coming from far off places, oh, there seems to be no great and grand news whatsoever. Not anywhere throughout the land. And Lin Yang sighed deeply and sadly. Oh, how he wished, well, maybe a mountain would move, or a storm would abate, or a war would start, or a famine would begin, or a plague could be cured. He longed for a miracle from Lord Buddha. You know, something worthwhile, something wondrous. For he thought he needed, well, at least that to take back to the masters. surely they would accept nothing less. Old Lin Yang was so disappointed and deeply saddened by everything. But, well, try as he might, nothing happened to Lin Yang. Nothing happened at the smithy's doorstep. So he moved on to a larger village, a busier town. He hoped that, well, along the way, as he talked with many strangers, he would surely discover some great and grand things. Certainly someone knew of wondrous news. Well, you're beginning to understand, probably, that in doing all of these things, the year, well, it was really passing by rather rapidly. Time was running out, and Lin Yang, well, he hadn't discovered any great and grand news. Whatever would he do now? If he refused to go back to the monastery because he had no important news to tell, then his entire life, all the remarkable teaching and all the exciting learnings to that point would be over. And he would have to toil as an ordinary peasant. Or maybe he could just do the best he could in life. He'd have to forsake his extraordinary life, and his boundless wisdom would be wasted or lost. Now, that sort of life was really not satisfactory to Lin Yang. He wasn't important, it wasn't important enough, and it certainly wasn't useful enough. His choice, then, was to return to the monastery and beg for forgiveness, because he had no great news. Oh, surely they would understand and give him another chance. He could tell them of the many wonderful things he'd learned, the things he'd gained, and the things he knew about life, and what he understood about himself and about others. But, there really was no great and grand news in any of that. He realized his choices weren't very good. His opportunities were very poor if he returned, and even worse by staying away. Whatever should he do? Well, Lin Yang decided to return to his beloved masters and seek forgiveness. For many weeks, he trudged forlornly back to the monastery, along a difficult, tiresome, dusty, dirty road, and arrived just 3 days prior to the end of the year. That was a long year of searching for great and grand news. Oh, he was tired, nearly exhausted. He lost all hope. As he knocked wearily at the massive gate, the bolt was thrown back and the door slowly, very slowly, opened. And he was welcomed only into the outer garden. And he walked hesitantly and cautiously into the garden. Oh, he was worried and distraught. He'd reached a point of utter despair, for surely, he said, they must know I have no worthy stories, no expansive understanding, and no splendid beliefs, no ennobling doings to report to them. Oh, I have no great and grand news. They kept him waiting for only a short time, and then they received him with reverence and with kindness, and with great ceremony. In the inner chamber, where all the masters had assembled. And when asked to give his report, Lin Yang cried, Oh, dear masters, I have no great and grand news. I've worked among the peasants. I've talked with travelers. I've toiled in the fields and in the shops and in the waterways. I've helped countless people. And I've gained much knowledge and much understanding. Oh, I can tell you of the many, many, many things I've learned, but oh, dear one, I have no wondrous news. Oh, I beg you to forgive me and grant me another chance. With that, Lin Yang fell upon his knees, sobbing uncontrollably, and again implored the master to be compassionate, to have mercy on his soul, and to give him more time, just a little more time, for surely he would then discover great and grand news. Oh, he begged them for a few more months. That's all he needed, just 2 or maybe 3 months. The response to his pleading was this. Go. You still have time. Go out again and discover your grand news, but you have only 3 days. You may meditate upon it or ask another. Do whatever you want, but return to us within 3 days. 3 days from this very hour and give us your grand news. Well, the council was over, the masters arose and stood silently, then left the chamber, leaving Lin Yang feeling completely abandoned and alone. He was heartbroken. Oh my gosh, only 3 days, he cried. 3 days, whatever will I do now? And again he was ushered through the garden and out the massive door. Well, not so ceremoniously this time, though they did it with a great flair, but little did that help, for they closed the door quietly and solemnly, and finally. And there he was on the outside of the monastery again. Turned out, unbelievingly, he was rejected and abandoned again. His inner support and inner strength were almost exhausted. His pleasures were gone. His warmth and comforts were shut off from him again. He was alone and forsaken. Oh, he hadn't asked for so much. Just some understanding, a little caring, and a little tenderness and love. And a little more time. That's all, just a little more time. Oh, life is so final, he wailed. It's always so extreme and inevitable. Whatever will I do now? He cried in anguish. How will I ever find great and grand news to report in only 3 days? Well, for almost, well, I almost a year, I've searched everywhere and tried most everything. I've listened to what many people had to say. I've meditated. I've spun the prayer wheel. Oh, I've done all the things I know how to do, but still I've not found any great and grand news. Lin Yang fell down beside the road and began crying wearily, uncontrollably. He wept so violently that his convulsions shook the very foundation of his life and of his soul. The earth, the world, everything about him seemed to tremble and shudder at his sobbing. And then, in the midst of his utter despair, an old beggar came up to him and asked, Master, oh Master, why do you cry so? Through his tears and anguish, Lin Yang looked questioningly at the old man and replied, sort of weary about it. Why do you call me master? The beggar responded, because I see in your eyes that you are a master, and I know in your heart that you are, but I also see that you do not truly see yourself. You do not know yourself well enough, and, well, oh dear, you do not truly believe in yourself. Lin Yang calmed his tears and slowly wiped them away. He sat with the old man throughout the day and, well, into the next, and then into the next. Oh, he learned profound lessons of life and awakened new understandings about himself. Oh, he realized many wondrous things about the world, and even things beyond the world, things he never knew were there to be found. Oh, it was a joyous and fulfilling time. Well, it was an enlightening time for Lin Yang. And after 2.5 days of talking and praying and meditating, after he'd fallen asleep, exhausted and awakened, Lin Yang knew his time was near. Not seeing the beggar, he cried, "Oh, Lord, he's gone!" Lin Yang was panicked. He searched all around, along the road, and in the bushes, and among the rocks, everywhere. The beggar was nowhere to be found, and time was quickly running out. Whatever would he tell the masters now? He wanted to take the old man to the monastery. Then, in the midst of his fear and dismay and his searching, he remembered the beggar's last words to him before they had fallen asleep. His gentle words were, "Master, no matter what you do in life, always be true to yourself." Well, time was gone. He had no choice. He had not moved very far from the monastery, and in speaking with the beggar, well, he laid himself open and learned many things, but he'd not heard one iota of grand news. So Lin Yang rushed back to the monastery and again knocked at the gate. Quietly and fearfully this time. And they opened the door with great rejoicing that he had returned before the year was up. They let him in and hurriedly ushered him into the inner council of masters. They brushed all formalities aside and asked him, "Quickly, quickly, what have you learned? What is your great and grand news? What do you have to say to us that will be, well, above all else, the greatest news to have in life?" They looked intently and hopefully at him. Oh, they were filled with compassion and concern, with love, and oh, they truly wondered what his great news would be. But Lin Yang hid his face again. And he fell down upon his knees and without a word began weeping. For he felt that he had no wondrous news. Then again he remembered the beggar's last words, and with that he lifted his head and said tearfully, pleading with those sitting around him, "Masters, oh masters, please, the greatest news I've learned and that I bring to you this day is that, well, in all things you do in life, always be true to yourself." Well, you may not think this to be the greatest news ever, but it was. It was the grandest news ever to Lin Yang and to the masters. And to most individuals in life. It is the one thing they all need to hear. The one thing they must all learn about, understand, and do in life. In all words and actions, with all individuals, in every relationship, always be true to yourself. Well, Lin Yang thought, certainly this will not be enough. Oh, it will never do. The council sat in breathless silence, uncompromising, rigorous, and unsmiling, until the Supreme Master walked over and said, "Dear one, we welcome you. Are you willing to always be true to your whole self, or will you always only be true to your 5% self? Haven't you always sensed that you are far greater and finer than the self you've always known, the 5% self you've always known, and lived for years, and unfortunately many times struggled against? Well, my question to you is this. For you have heard the story before. Did you hear with different ears tonight of what the story is all about?"
"Yes. 5% 95 commune. Master it."
"And then, it isn't a matter of, in that, say, doing what God wants, or doing trying to become greater and finer and gain all the things the 5% in life desire. It's not living the 5% emotions of yourself. It is being true to your whole self. Do you understand in that, then, the portrayal of the monastery being your eternal self? And that you are set out or away from your dark self to live in the light of life around you as a 10%? And to take grand news back to the 5%, to the 95%, and to bring that forth into the light so that you live the wholeness of yourself?
Yeah. Yes.
Now, is that a reasonable when I ask you what is your life all about, is that a reasonable image that you can pull up and say, this is my concept of life, and be able to then describe that? Could you describe and understand yourself as Lin Yang? Have you not in this life or in many times tried everything? Wasn't he testing life for grand news to take back to the masters? Is it possible then that you are testing and trying life to bring news back to the 95% dark matter of yourself? What great and grand news would you take to your 95% dark self, which is the eternal self of yourself, that you feel that would be great enough, grand enough, to have those people or beings in the monastery, the masters, listen to that, Patrick, the masters in the monastery come back and be with you? What about life in the light and living and experiencing life, would you say, in what way would be finer than living in a monastery shut away in your eternal self? Well, that's for you to think about. If there are no questions, good night for now.
Roger. Thank you.
Thanks, Roger.
Bye now.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye. That was aimed at about